The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I'm living in that 21st century, doing something mean to it. Do it better than anybody you ever seen do it. Screams from the haters, got a nice ring to it. I guess every superhero need the same music. No one man should have all that power. The clock ticking, I just count the hours. Stop tripping, I'm tripping off the power. Broken, the school closed, the prison's open. We ain't got nothing to lose. Everybody, we rolling. Everybody, we rolling. With some light-skinned girls and some Kelly Rowland. And it's white man world, we the ones chosen. So good night, cool world. I see you in the morning. I see you in the morning. This is way too much. I need a moment. No one man should have all that power. The clock ticking, I just count the hours. And I'm tripping off the power. Kill him, that's the world's hours.
You know, as usual, I am blessed. I am happy to be here with you all on this very special. All of them are special, actually, but this one's even special, too. Episode of Love and Life with Nick Nice. I am your host, Nick Nice. Thank you again for joining me. We have a fantastic show lineup today. First up, we have author Jay Sean Durham, who's going to be talking about his book, The Broke Brothers Revolution. He's going to be talking about money, dating, and manhood. So we'll get a chance to get into that. We also have the Minister of Truth himself, Derek E. Grayson. He's also running for the U.S. Senate, so we're going to talk to him about his campaign. So, yes, we're definitely, you know, kind of going in. I'm excited about today's show. I guess I'm trying to figure out what's going on out there in the world. It seems to be something is going on, but most importantly, you decided to block out everything else going on and wanted to join me today. So we have a really, 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 really great show. Don't forget, you can join the conversation by calling 347-989-8385, and then press 1 if you want to ask a question or make a comment. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter, on Facebook, at I Am Nick Nice. That's Nick without the K, Nice. And, yeah, you know, you can only follow me on those platforms, okay? Don't be trying to follow me in real life. I don't really need no stalkers in my life right now. But anyway... but it's funny because I had posted a tweet or like a post somewhere trying to get some feedback, and initially when I thought about having my first guest, the Broke Brothers Revolution, it kind of sparked this concept of, you know, money and dating and how that whole thing works out. So I thought that'd be kind of interesting because I didn't really think of it that way. Well, okay, I'm lying. I did think of it that way, but I just didn't say anything. And so Jay Sean's going to be in the building to kind of say something, but obviously it's more to that, so I'm excited about that. And then, the Minister of Truth, Derek Grayson, is running for the Senate as a Republican, and I think it'd be kind of good to kind of get his views on a kind of, you know, a lot of very interesting topics. So like I said, we have a great show lined up. I'm really, really excited to get into it, so let's just go ahead and get to a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Love and Life with Nick Nice. This is the Survival Radio Network.
Tired of applying for jobs only to get turned down because of the economy or lack of a degree? What if you can qualify to work for those same Fortune 500 companies without worrying about a degree and work them from the comfort of your home? With JP Employment Services, LLC, enjoy the benefits of making your own hours, enjoy more free time, and earn a great salary. For details, call 678-835-7371. That's 678-835-7371. Or go to www.jpemployment.com. Must be able to pass a background check and certifications. Call JP Employment today.
Looking for a cafe with a home-like appeal where all who enter feel like they are part of something? Visit My Coffee Shop, located in East Lake, Atlanta, Georgia. MCS has a full breakfast and lunch menu, offering both hot and cold options, and is home of the amazing Basil Lemonade. But don't forget their assortment of freshly brewed coffees. Come on by at 2462 Memorial Drive, Atlanta, Georgia, 30317. We're pretty sure My Coffee Shop at East Lake will become your coffee shop, too.
Can you feel it? Nothing can save you, for this is the season of catching the vapors. And since I got time, what I'm going to do is tell you how to spread it throughout my crew. Well, you all know T.J. Swan, who sang on my records. Make the music nobody beats the biz, well, check it. Back in the days before this began, he used to try to talk to this girl named Fran. The type of female with fly Gucci wear, with big truck jewelry and extensions in the hair. When Swan tried to kick it, she always fed, talking about, please, you work for UPS. Since he wasn't no type of big drug dealer, my man T.J. Swan didn't appeal to her. But now he trucks gold and wear fly valley boots, rough leather fashion and tough silk suits. Now she stopped fronting and wants to speak, and be coming to all the shows every single weekend. To get his deeper number, she be begging please, dying for the day to get skis. She caught the vapors.
Oh, and we're back.
She caught the vapors.
And we're back. I might as well just go ahead and jump on the track. Okay, I'm not going to do that. Anyways, this is Love and Life with Nick Nice, and of course I am Nick Nice. Like I said before, we have an amazing show for you tonight, so I'm excited to get started. So don't forget, you can join the conversation by calling 347-989-8385, then press 1. And as usual, our first segment is about love, and there's some things that definitely caught my eye about this brother. He had a book that seemed to kind of appeal to brothers in regards to the Broke Brothers Revolution. So I'm excited to talk to my next guest, Jay Sean Durham, is in the building. What's going on, Sean?
Hey, Nick. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man. Let's just, you know, it's funny because, you know, I like to have, you know, both men and women perspectives on the love segment. I think when I initially saw your book and the title and kind of the manifesto at first, I was like, oh, yeah, somebody needs to talk about this. So I was, like, excited to talk to you about it. But obviously the book is a little bit more than that. So let's just kind of start from the very beginning. Tell us a little bit about you and what led up to you writing this book.
All right. Again, thanks for having me. I'm a long-time writer. I'm in my 20th year of writing professionally. I'm dating myself a little bit, but I'm only 36. But I've written for some newspapers and done some freelance work. And I had, like a lot of people, had a bunch of qualms about dating and such. But I know some friends who have a lot of complaints about certain things. One is how expensive it is for guys to pick up the tab, or maybe the burden they feel to finance dating. Of course, a lot of women don't want to hear that, but I thought I'd explore that a little bit more. And so after a little bit of trial and error, and some of my own personal activities, I thought it'd be nice to have a book that has an initial premise about guys who are really upset with the notion of paying for women's drinks and dinners and all that stuff, sometimes just to say hi. And that sort of was the genesis of the Broke Brothers Revolution. Of course, it evolves into much more than that, but that's sort of how I got started with that idea.
Okay. So then, let's talk about the Broke Brothers Revolution. Then I know the concept and the title kind of hooks people in. So talk about the choice of the title and like what concept you really want to delve into from that point.
Oh yeah, sure. Well, first of all, it's about a man named Carlos Tyrone, who on the outside seems to be a pretty normal guy trying to do the right thing. He has a daughter with his baby mama who lives with him. They both live together. They all live together in the same house. And he feels unappreciated by his baby mama. And although he desires to have like a serious family thing go on with her and his daughter, he just starts to get frustrated. And from there, he decides to write a manifesto. We call it a manifesto in the book. It's actually a column that gets a little bit of attention. And he gets his boys to go along with him, and he's like, look, we're going to protest buying women's drinks. They start doing civil rights style stuff. We're going to protest buying women's drinks, picket ladies' night, try to get small claim legal defense funds to get money back from bad, bogus dates and trips that we've spent money on women, and try to start a cultural movement. And people don't take them seriously throughout the book, but as it progresses, Carlos called the guys the Broke Brothers Revolution because it's just the concept of being broke, having no money, although not all the characters are broke. But for me, the title actually has double meaning because as we get further into the book, the biggest question to be answered is, are these guys serious? Are they broke? They can't afford money? Or as we dig more into their personal lives and get more of a male perspective or the burden of becoming a man in the 21st century, are they broken? Men who may have made past decisions that still haunt them, and they're struggling to be whole in the 21st century definition of whatever a man is supposed to be during these ever-changing times.
Wow. Okay, so let's start with Carlos, right? Because in the beginning of the book, Carlos is out with his girlfriend, and she kind of tricks him or whatever to go to, I guess, a party that her girlfriends are having at Shout, or Strip, rather. So they're there. And he's the only guy there, and they're partying or whatever, drinking. You guys are there. They're there for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden, they look at him to pick up the tab. And so that seems to be a point of contention in terms of the creation of the manifesto. So I thought that was kind of interesting because it kind of spoke to maybe social norms. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yes, I can. It is so many guys have walked into that sort of trap where you're hanging out and you may not even be dating any of the women. In this case, Carlos is with his girlfriend, and they just went, I'll explain it a little bit. They just got out of a movie and had a dinner or whatever, and they drop in to Lola, that's his girlfriend / baby mama's name, into Lola's friend's birthday party, and they just drop in for a moment. He buys around, but they stick around long enough for the total check to come. The check is pretty ridiculous just for three or four other women. And they basically look at him and expect him to patronize and pay for it. And when you talk about society, with so many people say they have friends of the opposite sex, or I have a girlfriend who's not my girlfriend, or I have a guy friend, you know, women will say that. But usually, or very often, those friendships are predicated on the friend who they're not sleeping with or whatever paying for everything, or that expectancy because he's the man of the group to pay for stuff. The funny thing is that really does go away when people get married. So you wonder if these people are friends or not. If these are same-sex friendships, girlfriends expect their girls to pay for stuff, or they trade off. There's some degree of equivalence. Guys usually either say, I got this one, or they expect some equivalence, or everyone pay their own portion of the tab. But all of a sudden, when you're in mixed company, friendship all of a sudden takes on a whole different level. And especially in this case, Carlos is around a bunch of women who don't necessarily like him. And he's only there because Lola dragged him there, and Lola's getting upset with him. And that becomes like one of the breaking points, and Carlos just thinks that everything is so unfair. And he writes his manifesto, and he's like, you know, we got to do something about this. And that's when he gets his boys to go along with him, and the story takes off from there.
Now, in the manifesto, I thought that was interesting because not only did he take it from that social norm situation, but then I guess he kind of expanded and started looking at, you know, the club promotions. And I think one of the things he talked about was how you can have women who are making just as much money and I guess don't have to really spend a lot of it on going out because it seems to be subsidized by men. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I can absolutely talk about this. It's hilarious. First, a story about the manifesto. The manifesto is a column that Carlos actually writes after this night, which is a complete debacle. But it's an actual column that I wrote back in 2004 or 2006. It was some years back. I actually wrote it word for word, and I just changed the byline and put that in the book. And I got so many letters from that column. And the point of the column was, it comes from, if you're familiar with literature, Jonathan Swift's A Modest Proposal, where this Irish writer was proposing a lot of crazy things to deal with the overpopulation back during the 19th century Ireland. Well, this was like a modest proposal where a guy is supposedly so fed up with the way society is, he's saying, look, these women are getting over on us. We should protest. This is crazy. All this other stuff. And because of that, he starts this movement. It's actually based off of a true story of David Gillespie in New Jersey, who this white guy in New Jersey, who got ladies' nights banned from the state of New Jersey. He actually won that suit. Now, I'm sure he's not getting laid right now, but he won that suit. So I put that in the book, and I wrote that, and I think it was kind of interesting because that I wanted to express outwardly the frustration many guys feel when they have female friends, or they have, well, females are kind of derogative, when they have women friends, or when they're the only penis at a table, and they're all of a sudden expected to take care of everything, yet a lot of women who may make as much money as them, or they're totally independent, and you're not their man, expect him to take care of everything. And if that were to go the opposite direction, and if women had to patronize men in that fashion, even if there's no expectancy of sex or whatever, there would be bloody riots in the streets. There'd be no way in hell that women would be happy with that trade-off. And so Carlos just sort of calls out the modern 21st century woman who says she's so on top of her game and who can do things on her own, yet she's still, some of them are still using these contrived methods to not take care of themselves. They're not going to give a guy anything, and this person's supposed to be your friend, just like Stacy and Luis is your friend. Then why is Billy or Marcus paying for everyone at the table, and you ain't even thinking about him until it's time to go back out again?
Hold on real quick, because I feel you when you're talking about, like, okay, some relationships where they're strictly platonic. But I think, like, the truth is, though, there's a lot of instances where we're not really talking about those type of relationships. Like, in some instances, the dude is trying to get with the chick, right?
Sure.
So in that mindset, like, okay, I'm trying to get with her, so I'll take her on a date, I'll pay, I invite her or whatever, you know. So how does that fit in? Because oftentimes there is something in it for us, but I guess my thing is, in a dating situation, if you're talking about negotiating the terms of dating, be more specific towards that if you can.
Well, yeah, sure, absolutely. My personal opinion is that, well, first of all, I'll predicate things like this. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Sorry. Just don't believe in it. That's old school. People are not just going to do stuff for strange people on a whim like that, unless it was just they were just feeling good that day and they do it. So, ladies, if a guy is buying you a drink, Chris Rock said it best, and I'm not going to go into the vulgarities, but no man is just meeting women, strange women, just to make them his friend. Men, straight men, aren't just looking for women to be friends. I have broken this down another way. Men are usually friends with women by proxy, meaning that you work together, and so work is first, or your neighbors, or you're in school together and you're in study group, or you go to church or something, or you go to the same. Your kids are in the same school, and you meet each other, you lean each other. It's friendship by proxy. But strange people don't just meet and patronize other strange people for the sake of, all right, I'm just going to be a friend to you. Not men. Men don't usually do that. Unless they're absolutely – it ain't likely. I don't care how big your ego is, and a lot of women have ego, and they know this. They know that many guys are approaching them to have dinner or take them out to whatever. And he's not just doing it to do it. In many cases, many women are wondering, why won't this dude make the move? But, you know, that's another thing altogether. So in that case, I just want to say, and I'll try to be short, I just want to say, yeah, in that case, when there is an effort and he's putting the money out there to do stuff, yeah, sure. I mean, no one should be blamed when someone is trying to patronize you for something like that. But then after that, and after it's been laid out that, all right, nothing's going to happen here, if you still keep accepting it, there's still going to be an expectation somewhere. No such thing as a free lunch. So if I have a daughter, that's what the first thing I'll tell my daughter, look, baby, you can take care of yourself and all that. A strange man comes up to you and he wants to patronize you. He's interested. And there you need to negotiate how much you want to be either dealt with as aggravation or whatever. But I don't want you to be, future daughter, the type of person who just takes advantage of people who you know are interested in you to do certain things because you're bored on a Saturday night or something like that. Be above board and keep on moving.
Well,
I think people respect that.
Well, let me ask you this, because when we talked a little earlier, there was a good point we kind of reached in terms of nowadays you have women who are making more money, right? And
yeah.
I think part of it kind of ties into the idea of what a man's supposed to do to, quote-unquote, be a real man, right? So part of that involves money in terms of being able to take care of and do for his woman. So, but at the same time, you have a very interesting situation where women are progressing in the employment field. They're making, you know, just as much, if not more, especially in certain communities, than their male counterparts. So kind of scaling it back a little bit, if you have two people who are trying to get to know each other, who are invested in trying to find a significant other, are you also thinking that the burden that the man has to play in the courtship of that process, is that something that you're also talking about too a little bit?
I'm talking about, first of all, I think the book is just a nice reset button for both sexes to try to figure out what the hell do they want from each other. Because some men, there are plenty of men who have tons of money, and they just try to buy courtship. They just try to buy a woman, and that's lame too. So I don't want to just get on women about this whole thing. But when it comes to 21st century, and yes, you have women who are doing six figures, seven figures easy, and they meet a regular dude, the numbers are changing to the point where a man just can't finance all of his options. This is one thing I tell a lot of women. When you meet a guy, he's probably in somewhere down the line paid to buy you a drink or something. Many women don't buy anything for an opportunity, not through a man, not to approach a man. Men often purchase some things so they can have opportunity. That's one thing. Secondly, things have changed so much that, first of all, back in the old days, men used to patronize women. You see a woman at a bar or whatever, or wherever he'd see her out. And he'd do it because, one, he made way more money than her because the women were not in corporate America. They were probably doing something clerical or secretarial work or domestic work, if they were working at all. And so society easily said, hey, you're making more money, Jack. Why don't you take care of her to get to know the woman or something like that? Well, that's completely on its edge now. Totally in the African-American community. So if money was the only reason that patronized version of chivalry existed, then if more women are making more money, then there should be a more balancing act before you have these expectations, especially since the numbers are favoring more women making more money than guys. I'm a proponent of, and it never works because I can't ever sell this, I think you start small, or you go Dutch, if possible, or something like that. And then as you get to know someone and get to know each other more, then I think you should take on more risk, particularly as a man, to show that, okay, I can take on more risk as I like you more. But I got to tell you, if you're a man and you're trying to date every single woman and spend money like a lot of women want you to do just so you can have options, you're not going to have any bank account. You're going to be no good to anybody. And I don't think many mothers would ask their sons to go out there and just spend frivolously on every single woman that he's interested in blindly. I think you got to be smart about things.
Well, I think the other thing, too, we talked about was, you know, this book kind of starts and talks about the dating realm of it and kind of talks about the money side, but then you also mentioned duality of, are these men broken? And kind of expound a little bit more towards the definition of manhood. And how, yes, how do you think that when it comes to money and even women, that those two interact when it comes to the definition of manhood?
Well, I think this this is the trickiest part of trying to figure out what a man is. A man is a fellow who's going to do whatever he can to provide. And I think men, real men, define themselves in juxtaposition or in correlation to their relationship with women and their woman. That doesn't mean that he's going to be able to provide you a mansion, but he should be able to provide you a good living, decent home, security, that sort of thing. That's what men do. The other piece of that, though, in the 21st century is that all of a sudden with reality TV shows and money, money, money being predicating everything, people are thinking that you must have an abundance of money and that makes you a man. That's not necessarily true. God didn't say that, not my God. God said a man provides, but he doesn't say, oh, all the men will be rich. That's not true. But a man, a real man, will go and do whatever is necessary for his family so you can have a comfortable living, so you can have a good life. But it's not promising a glamorous life. And I think in many pockets, I live in D.C. It's certainly there in D.C. In many pockets of America, people are confusing a glamorous life with a good foundational life to live. You want a man who has metal, who is made of sterner stuff, who will go the extra mile and do what is necessary for his wife, for his kids, all of that. But that does not mean you're promised a billionaire. God didn't ever say that. And people who say that equally yoked, that's what that means, that ain't what that means either. And I'm tired of hearing that. Equally yoked means you're of like mind to raise people in a household. It ain't got nothing to do with, okay, because if equally yoked meant what people think it means, then all those old school relationships where the man worked and the woman just tended to the house, well, that wouldn't be equally yoked. But that's an old-fashioned relationship that people see as legitimate. So equally yoked has nothing to do with just, okay, we're both Fortune 500 CEOs. That's not correct. Equally yoked is a state of mind and a state of being in the covenant of God. But that's a whole different story altogether. But I'm sorry. As far as the Brothers Brothers Revolution, yeah.
Because we don't have a lot of time. And I want to get Keith in. He's on the line. But I was going to say, though, too, that, I mean, a lot of times if you ask, and some folks are asking for a CEO and they're not a CEO themselves. But we don't have a lot of time. Keith, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Keith, what's going on, family?
Everything is good. Everything is good.
Are you had a comment or a question in terms of this conversation?
Yeah, I wanted to, my first initial statement is a question. I'm not sure if you touched on it briefly, as I have been kind of in and out of the conversation due to some other stuff going on in my household. But I was wondering, if you're in a situation with a woman and you're trying to court a woman, and, you know, you happen to know that her status is a little bit above yours, okay? So, you know, financially she's above yours. As a lifestyle, she's above yours. So she knows that, you know, because growing up, I was always taught a man is supposed to be that chivalrous individual. I was always taught that the man is supposed to provide, just as you said. So I do believe that's correct, and I do believe that's changing. However, the reason is because in those days, as you stated, the man is the one that had the better job. Now, as women are getting equal rights, equal jobs, it's kind of difficult now to take that role simply because women are allowed to get those jobs now. And we were the providers now as of back then, but we're not the providers now. So if you are courting a woman whose status is above you, you have nothing to offer her.
Keith, as far as history is concerned, what do you have to offer her? Keith, actually, I'll take this one because we actually do have to go. And I think the point that what I enjoyed about Sean's book was that ultimately you have to define yourself and be happy with yourself. And ultimately yourself is what you can provide to someone else beyond the superficial things at the end
of the day. That's exactly right.
And that's the process that I think we, whether it's a man or a woman, have to go through in both finding ourselves, being comfortable with ourselves, loving ourselves, and knowing that ourselves is enough. Would that be about right, Sean?
That's absolutely right. And I'll be quick about it, too. That's the point of the book. These guys, they're not necessarily just broke. They may be broken, and they need to be comfortable with their own manhood, with what they can do, so they can go out and be the best man they could be for their woman. They don't have to be a man to all of the women of the world. They just need to find that one woman who will respect them and understand where they're coming from and go forth and do good stuff. So that's the point of the book, ultimately, because these characters
and that's
are
what,
broken.
And where can people go and find out more about you and the book? Because it definitely sounds like a great read. I really enjoyed it, and I think there's a lot of great things that people can get from it, both men and women. Where can people go to find out more about your book?
It's very simple. The Broke Brothers Revolution, thebrokebrothersrevolution.com. You'll find out all my information there. I'm on Twitter, at The Broke Bros Rev. But, yeah, thebrokebrothersrevolution.com. I'm currently doing a mini tour throughout the Southeast. I got an event tomorrow in Macon, another event Saturday in Columbia, South Carolina. So look me up, check me out, buy a book from me. I'll sign it for you if you buy a signed copy or a T-shirt or whatever. And this thing is spreading because we just did a thing, two things down in Statesboro yesterday and today, and I'm really pleased with how the students took it. They really had some good questions, and I really enjoyed that they enjoyed it.
Well, man, listen, I enjoyed talking to you. Hopefully the audience enjoys the session. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You're listening to Love and Life with Nick Knights, and this is Survivor Radio Network.
Cake Cafe Atlanta, where desserts are created and you taste love. Looking to fill your sweet tooth? Do you have a special event or occasion you're planning? Give Cake Cafe Atlanta a call. Located at 368 Candler Road, Atlanta, Georgia, 30317. Open Monday to Saturday, 10 to 7 p.m. You can get the best in pies, cakes, cobblers, coffee, brownies, specialty popcorn, and more. Visit their website at www.cakecafeatlanta.com or give them a call at 404-284-0106. That's 404-284-0106. Call Cake Cafe Atlanta today.
Go ahead, Reza. I don't even know her, but I feel like I know her, so I can call her Reza. Welcome back to Love and Life with Nick Knights. Had a great love segment one time for Jay Sean Durham and his book, The Broke Brothers Revolution. Next up, we're going to go into the life segment, and I'm honored to have my next guest. Shout out to Catherine for making it happen. With me, joining me, is the Minister of Truth, Minister Derek E. Grayson, and he is the Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate. Derek, how are you?
Man, I'm top of the evening, my friend.
Hey, I'm glad to hear that. So listen, you know, I got a chance to check out some of your videos, but to some of my audience that, you know, are not maybe familiar with the Minister of Truth and you, can you tell us and tell them a little bit more about you?
Well, I was raised in Southwest Atlanta, a little place called Adamsville. Went into the military, Navy. Went to college, got a degree in computer science and information technology. And because of some personal challenges in my own life, I had to overcome some self-made problems. And in overcoming those, I said, you know what? I need to give something back, because if I can overcome it, other folk can too. So I got involved in ministry and my community. I work with the homeless. I work with disadvantaged teenagers that were on the path to a life of crime. I've done HIV counseling and testing. a number of things. I even held church in my own home where I personally prepared breakfast every Sunday morning for a year. And I started making videos on YouTube about 6 years ago, basically talking about the issues in the black community. I was often criticized for talking about those issues, and black folk would particularly ask me, why are you always talking about what we do? White folk do it too. And I keep telling them, this ain't about white folks. This is about us. And, well, you never offer no solutions. I say, I offer solutions every time I talk about it. I say, don't do it. Okay, so, but, you know, there are also other ways, other solutions that I've often offered, but people tend to not want to hear the truth. Truth is a painful thing. And to change is a painful process. Growing is painful. And so I spent 3.5, 4 years on that path, and I finally decided that based on the urging of the Spirit of God, it was time to move on and take it to the next level. Our government is corrupt. Now, folk often look at me like I'm crazy. Now, I don't consider myself a conspiracy theorist. So I'm quick to remind folk when they look at me and say, oh, man, the government is all right. Government ain't doing nothing. I say, let us not forget, Wounded Knee, where they told the soldiers, save your bullets, use your boot heels to kill those babies. Slavery, the Salem witch trials. Yeah, these are Christians drowning women and burning them and hanging them because they were possessed with the devil. All government, the Tuskegee Airmen, Waco, Kent State, the actual first school shooting by government officials, unarmed students. So when people look at me like I'm crazy, when I tell them the government is you know, has not been our friend for quite a while. Now, there are good people in government, but we have allowed fractions or factions of government to go in and co-opt the will of
the government. Yeah. I don't mean to cut you off, but it's funny because we're talking about government, and one of the things that you are doing is running for a position in government, right? So what I feel like would be fair to the audience is kind of talking about the reasons why, because I'm assuming that while government may be in some factions corrupt, that hopefully your ascension or appointment or election into a position can hopefully make change. Is that the basic premise, if I understand correctly?
Exactly. Right. When people ask me, how can you change? Jesus, you know, I'm a Christian, and I tell folk that, so, you know, some folk got a problem with that's their problem. Duh. And I follow the examples of the Bible. Jesus went into hell and took the keys. Sometimes you have to go into the belly of the beast, and you have to change it from within. They need to be changed from within, but they need somebody that's willing to go in with a flashlight, a broom, and a whistle to expose, to clean out, and to sound the alarm bell. And I'm prepared to do that at the cost of my own life. And many people have laid down their lives for this country. Martin Luther King, Mecca Evers. You know,
so why specifically the Senate?
Greatest
as opposed
bang
to other elected positions.
Greatest bang for the buck. Greatest bang for the buck.
And I'm assuming that you mean that in terms of the fact that there's a limited number per state, that the influence that the Senate has is a lot more impactful per candidate than, say, the other part of the House. Is that about right?
You got it. You right on, hit the nail right on the head.
Okay, so moving that conversation forward, let's get into the meat of some of the things that I saw on your platform, starting with education. You know, what areas do you think that, as far as education, needs improvement, and what are some of those different initiatives that you want to push forward to changing those things?
First, I want the federal government out of education. I want to block Common Core. They've already screwed up the schools within the urban areas. There are a war zone. Kids aren't learning a thing. And now, and let me just throw this in. I keep telling white folk, you know, it was laughable for blacks to think that Obama was going to change their lives significantly in a positive fashion. I say it is just as laughable for white America to still think that the government has their back. They don't care about race. They make us care about race. That being said, Common Core is an attempt now to expand government's reach into all of our educational system, even those who homeschool.
Let me ask you this, because we don't have a lot of time, and I know that the folks out there want to really get to the meat of it. But in a lot of cases, wasn't a lot of the functioning of schools kind of like a local thing? In other words, like property taxes and different municipalities come together to kind of govern the school system that they have, and some of the funding that they may in fact get does come from the federal government. But in terms of the conditions of the actual schools, are you putting that onus more on the federal government, or are you saying that there are local things that people can do to improve their school systems?
First, the local people can't improve the school system as long as the government is pulling the strings from behind. Case in point, you get money at the local level from the federal government based on the number of kids that are counted present at school that day. We have kids that don't want to be there, aren't learning. Teachers spend more time disciplining kids instead of teaching them. Principals used to expel those students. Put that back on the parents, but because parents know that they have guaranteed daycare, they don't take the time to ensure that their children do what they're supposed to do. So we need to start forcing parents to parent again. If they have to be responsible for those children, they're more inclined to make sure that the kids go to school to do what they need to be doing, or they won't be in school. That was government involvement messing things up. When I was in high school, we had alternative paths for education. You might want to be a metal worker. You might have wanted to do woodworking, auto mechanics. They took all of that away and said, okay, everybody is going to learn so that everybody can go to college. Everybody ain't cut out to go to college. Everybody's not going to be a rocket scientist. They took all of those alternatives away, setting children up for failure. This is government involvement. They need to go away. The control needs to be brought back to the local level. Parents that want to homeschool, they shouldn't have to pay taxes for the school system if they aren't utilizing it.
Let me ask you this then, because when you have the bubble, supposedly the housing bubble that occurred, a lot of homes, property taxes, that affects the money that comes locally. So are you advocating that if there's no augmentation to the funding that these local municipalities just have to do on their own in regards to funding their own education system?
But we were much better off without federal involvement. Kids actually learn things.
Let me ask you this, because I know there's a lot of different issues I saw that you posted on your website, so I want to talk about a couple of others real quickly, because I think this ties into the education conversation, and that is taxes, right? So there are some things that you favor in regards to taxes, and what kind of effects do you think that would have on, say, something like education?
Well, if I'm able to keep more of my money in my pocket, and the government is not preventing me from placing my child in a school that will provide a better education for my child, or something that I seek for my child, I can afford to do that. But in my personal situation, for instance, we struggled to send our kids to private school just so that they would not be victimized by government-based public school system, and we still pay the property tax. That's not fair. So there needs to be some adjustments. But again, this comes down to getting government out of the picture. That's where the problem starts. And to fix it, that's where you have to start. We got to get government out.
Okay, well, let me ask you this other question, because you talked about, speaking of government, kind of I see a theme coming here. I often hear people saying that government doesn't create jobs, but I feel like as a senator or as a person who's elected to office, that somehow you may be able to affect the climate of job creation. So how do the two go hand in hand in the sense of, well, technically government doesn't create jobs, but maybe possibly as a senator you'd be able to help do something to help create jobs?
Government's role is to foster an environment where American citizens are able to go out and create jobs for other American citizens. What our government has engaged in are policies that have allowed corporations and businesses to steal profit while at the same time raping the economy and killing job creation. Case in point, why should a corporation receive the Bush tax cuts when they export jobs overseas? If you call Cisco's technical support, the representatives are over in India. If you call Priceline's customer service, they're down in Mexico. Those used to be American jobs. They are no longer here, and those same corporations reap the rewards of tax breaks. They also have numerous loopholes that allow them to avoid paying taxes by offshoring many of their profits. I say wipe out those tax breaks and then start from scratch. Get rid of the loopholes and say to these companies, if you want tax breaks, you hire Americans first. That's who's going to get the tax breaks, those who work towards building this country. We bailed out GM, the taxpayers did. When GM became solvent, what did the first thing they do? They closed down shops, dealerships all over this country, and then exported or outsourced the sourcing of the materials that they used to make their automobiles. Those used to be American jobs, and American jobs were lost, and it was the American people that bailed them out. There's something wrong with that, and it was government that allowed that to happen.
Well, we're going to come back to that. On the topic of guns, I know sometimes people interpret the Second Amendment differently, but I kind of got from reading your website that in terms of repealing all gun laws for law-abiding citizens, meaning that does that mean that the average citizen can go out there and get a military-grade weapon, and does that also mean that because of the Second Amendment there should be no limits to any type of weapons that a average law-abiding citizen could get? Because you would agree that before there are citizens who are law-abiding, but they hadn't committed a crime, so arming them possibly. So I just wanted to know what your take on was that.
Yeah, I'm asked that quite a bit. If the local police can have it, a citizen should be able to have it. Now, I'm not talking about armored tank vehicles, but weapons that the police are able to use against the citizens, citizens should be able to own the same weapons as well. Our Second Amendment is not about hunting. It is about our ability to protect ourselves from a government that may one day decide to engage in tyrannical behavior. That's all gun control is about. Gun control does not stop crime. Criminals don't care about gun control laws. They will not submit to universal background checks. They don't care about open carry permits. They are going to get their guns illegally no matter how many gun control laws we put on the books. And there's study after study. Chicago, toughest gun control laws in this country, yet we have more kids being killed in Chicago than there were those that were being killed over in Iraq. So gun control is about limiting the law-abiding citizen's ability to resist tyrannical rule. That's all that it is about, and it is about nothing else. When all these in America, our media had perpetuates this concept that white life is more valuable than black life. How do I know this? Anybody can see it if they open their eyes. Black kids have been being killed with high capacity weapons, magazines, for the last 25 years. Nobody talked about gun control. It wasn't until there was loss of white life, white children being killed, that they started talking about it, because they knew, hey, we can use this as a springboard to push our agenda to identify, to limit, and to disarm those who own most of the guns legally. And who are they? Middle-class white Americans. That is all it is about.
Now, the other thing I thought that was interesting to talk about was how you felt about the war on drugs. And there seems to also be an environment where the legalization of marijuana is afoot. And I always found it interesting that people who were liberal, and not liberal, but libertarians, if you will, people who believe in freedom and things of that nature would support something like, you know, the legalization of marijuana, but more importantly, like the drug war. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. It has been proven time and time again that marijuana is no more harmful than alcohol. Congress, senators, they've got their booze. Let people smoke pot if that's what they want to do. Put in the same controls that you do with alcohol. You get caught under the influence, you go to jail. But the war on drugs has been nothing but an attack against blacks, minorities, and poor whites. That is it. Why? Because it benefits the prison industrial complex. That's all it's about. The war on drugs needs to end. Marijuana needs to be legalized, and we all know that the reason it was made illegal in the first place was because of the pulpwood industry. They didn't want any competition, so it was made illegal. So, again, that's government. See, I don't know why it's so hard for folk to grasp that our government and those that fund the politicians who are bought and paid for with special interest money, super PACs and PACs, I don't know why it's so hard to understand that, you know, they're self-serving and that they are capable of doing things that are in their best interest and not the best interest of the American people. And the ones that I blame the most are the American people, because we have abdicated our responsibility to hold our elected officials accountable for their actions. We let them do this to us.
And the other thing, too, I want to get to real quickly, because I thought it was interesting that you say that you're pro-life and pro-choice. Can you talk about that as well?
Sure. As a Christian, I am against abortion. Me and my household, no abortion. You screw up and make a mistake, adoption. But we will not do abortion, period. I believe in pro-choice up to a point. You have several choices before you get to having to abort a child. There's adoption. You can't find enough babies to adopt. Look around. Most of them are older children, but there aren't enough babies to adopt. Babies would be adopted. That's a choice. There's condoms. There are birth control pills. There's even the morning after pill that will work up to 3 days, 72 hours after the fact. So you have all of these choices that you can utilize to prevent a pregnancy. Now, if I own a house, I can bulldoze that house because I own it. But if there was a body inside of that house, I have a responsibility to make sure that I do no harm to that body. I have to make sure that house is empty. Well, it's just like when you get pregnant. Science has proven that life starts at conception. The moment the cells start to divide, life has begun. We have a duty at that point, if you get pregnant, to protect that life. And the government has no business being engaged in the promotion, the supporting, or the funding of abortions. So,
let me ask you this, though. Let me ask you this point, because we don't have a lot of time, and we actually have to go. But a common thing, the most interesting thing that I found is when you talk about the government, in some instances when you're talking about the government stepping in to enforce laws, right, it's important to have the government then, right? But where do you draw that line? Because to me, if you're talking about, let's say, abortion, for example, regardless of what I may think about it or you personally may think about it, if we're talking about the right for the next person to have that choice, then if government puts laws in place that doesn't give that person that right, which is what they currently have, isn't that another example to kind of follow your point of maybe government intruding into people's lives? Because if we're talking about people having the freedom to make certain decisions, at what point do we get to say you don't have that freedom?
Well, it is the government's role to protect all life. Okay, Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is government's primary responsibility. However, some things belong to the state. As a senator, I would not engage in any activities that would seek to prevent or limit a woman's right to choose which way she wants to go. That's a state's issue. I believe states, the citizens of a state, should decide whether or not they want abortion to be legal within that state. What I would do as a senator is to ensure that the federal government did not engage in any activity that would pay for an abortion with taxpayer money. My thing is, if it's legal and you go out there and you make the mistake of getting pregnant for whatever circumstances and you want to abort that child, you should pay for it. And that's it. And it has nothing to do with how I feel about it, but that's just a fact. Your body, you pay for it. I don't want to pay for it. The American people don't want to pay for it. They shouldn't have to pay for it because it was a personal choice that you made. You want the unilateral choice to abort it, then you should pay for it. I think that's fair.
Well, you know what? I'm sure, you know, obviously we could probably talk for hours, and I would love to have you on again and kind of get into the meat of things. So hopefully we can have you back on. But in the meantime, where can people go to find out more about you and your campaign?
Grayson2014.com. I'm very vocal. I put it out there. I write articles. I tweet. I'm the only candidate doing two things. I actually interact with folk that want to talk with me directly as long as they are civil, because some folk aren't interested in learning. They just want to you know, go at it, and I just don't have time for that. Life is too short. And the second thing is, you know, I don't have somebody speaking for me. I answer questions that I am asked. I don't dodge the bullet or anything like that. I tell you where I stand. Why? Because I want you to know what you're getting up front. And I am the only Republican candidate that is actively reaching out to all races, particularly Democrats and blacks, because I just don't think any other Republicans that I know of really cares. So,
but you know what?
I
want to have you back on definitely because there's a lot more that we can get to, but we actually have to go real quick. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the truth, Minister of Truth, rather, Derek Grayson. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Viratech is a publicly traded company that has created the first biotech social network. Founded by Dr. Kevin Buckman, the company has built a unique platform that will allow biotech research to become open sourced for the first time in history. A breakthrough company in the biotech industry, Viratech is publicly held, meaning anyone can become a shareholder of the company. The trading symbol is Vira, spelled V-I-R-A. More information about Viratech is available via Yahoo Finance. Just type in the ticker symbol V-I-R-A.
Welcome back. Well, you know what? I kind of feel like, you know, the minister said it best in regards to the topic of marijuana. I wanted to put my five in on it, but I felt like he kind of captured it. I think ultimately when you talk about where we are as a society and having choices and so forth, depending on where you're at, you just kind of want to have that choice. And I think that's what it really comes down to in terms of certain people who are suffering from medical issues, because I think Sanjay Gupta did a piece on it recently that kind of spoke to that. But more importantly, you know, there are a lot of things that are already kind of out there. And I think ultimately as consumers, and I guess weighing it with the interest of the government and protecting us sometimes even from ourselves, we should have a conversation in regards to, is this something that, you know, should be on the same level as cocaine or any other hard drugs, and should people be spending a lot of time in prison because of it, and at what point in time does the individual have the right to do certain things? Because right now I'm about to go crack me a cold beer, and I have the right for that. But anyways, I want to thank my guest, Jay Sean Durham. I want to thank the Minister of Truth, Derek Grayson, for coming through today for Love and Life with Nick Nice. It's been my pleasure. At the end of the day, just remember that regardless, when you're on that road less traveled, you're not traveling by yourself, because there are many of us out there. Don't forget, we'll be back next week, same time, same place. And again, thank you. I am blessed that you chose to spend your time with me. We'll see you next week. And you're listening to Love and Life with Nick Nice on Survivor Radio Network. We'll be right back.
feel some living when you live through someone else. There's no need of crying when you don't do what you felt. Your mind is a map, your heart is the guide. Trust your intuition.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.